Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 249 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. I'm Patrick in Halifax. He's Justin in Saskatoon. Justin, I feel like fate or some part of the universe is forcing us to space these episodes out more.
Yeah.
And more every episode.
We're the being next conspired one, against, yeah.
Yeah, the next episode 250 will be recorded shortly after the heat death of the universe.
Yeah. For context, I got sick last week and sounded like complete garbage for like 3 days. So it was just impossible to talk. So that's why we've had the latest break. So it's my fault totally this time. But yeah, it just happened. But we're here now and do an episode before the All-Star break, which is always good.
That's right, yeah, and it's weird because we're recording before the start of the game this afternoon between the Detroit Tigers and your Toronto Blue Jays, but it's worth noting it really doesn't matter what happens in this game. Even if they lose, they're still going to be in the third wild card spot no matter what. They are currently 2 games up on a surging Boston team.
They're actually not in the wild card spot right now because they're tied with the Yankees, so...
Oh, I see. Yeah. So
the Yankees own the tiebreaker at this point. So
at this moment in time. Okay, yeah. So worst case scenario, they will be a game back of the third wild card spot. Best case scenario, they'll be tied with Houston for the second wild card. Yeah. So there's a lot to play for today.
Yes.
Especially after getting embarrassed yesterday. But we'll talk about all of that. We'll talk briefly about how things have been going. For the Jays, we'll talk about injury recoveries, we'll talk about our All-Stars, we'll talk about just the crazy amount of babies that have been born this year for the Blue Jay babies. Yeah, I guess. we'll also chat about a couple of players who have been struggling at the plate, and we'll do a little talk about, you know, what this team's going to look like after the All-Star break heading into the deadline. So Justin, take us through the news and let's just get right into it.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, we have some injury updates for everybody. Zach Pop was actually reinstated from the injured list, but optioned to Buffalo this morning. Had just completed his rehab assignment, but unfortunately for him, there's nobody that they want him over in the bullpen currently. Hyunjin Ryu, Patrick, is scheduled to start for Dunedin today in the low A ball. He threw 3 innings in the Complex League last week, gave up 1 run, and struck out 5 in that time. Our boy Chad Green was scheduled to face live hitters yesterday. Haven't seen any news this morning yet regarding whether or not that happened or not, but both of those guys are starting to work their way back, and I'm sure we'll both be getting more action in over the Major League All-Star break here. And I think late July returns for both of them is kind of the timeline at this moment in time. I mean, Ryu's throwing, he threw 3 innings last time. You got to think he's probably going to throw 4 innings today. The plan was to get him up around 60 pitches. I'm guessing he probably got close to that in that first start. So, I mean, 70-80 pitches today as they work him back up. So, a couple more rehab starts for him, and we could be talking about a rotation logjam, which we will discuss later in the show here. Adam Simber is still not throwing. Of course, he's on the IL again with a right shoulder impingement, kind of the same issue he had earlier in the season when he had the rhomboid issue. So, that right shoulder has been giving Simber grief over the past couple of months.
Hey, he hasn't looked good either.
Yeah, and that could be a reason for it. It's just something's not right in that shoulder at the moment structurally. So hopefully he can get that sorted out. All-Stars, Patrick. We've got Bo, Vladdy, Kevin Gausman, and Whit Merrifield going to the All-Star game. None of them will be starting the game. They were all selected as reserves. Gausman and Whit, Bo and Vladdy all voted in by their peers as they weren't vote getters through the fan vote. Vladdy is going to take part in the home run derby. I believe he is the third seed or something going in to this thing. So it's a interesting battle. There's lots of big name hitters in there. Pete Alonso's in there. Julio Rodriguez is going to take part in it. Mookie Betts will be in there. Should be an exciting event. I probably still won't watch it because I don't really care about the All-Star game because it's completely meaningless, but that's for everybody else to enjoy. And last bit of news, George Springer is on the paternity list, so congrats on the sex there. Hopefully everything goes well and there's a healthy baby born. So George is getting an early start to his All-Star break and we'll get some time off to spend some time with his wife and their new dish to their family. So that'll be exciting.
It's a big win.
Huge W.
Springer.
Yeah.
What's great too is about these All-Star selections is it just goes to show that despite the fact that this team has been at times very frustrating to watch, to say the least,
yeah,
there are still lots of positives. And the four guys going to the All-Star game, I think, are the pinnacle of that. They're the ideal, they're the ideal Jays. I don't think there's anybody else I would have sent.
Jordan Romano, maybe.
Yeah, but I understand why he's not going. I mean,
yeah, there's just not enough spots on the roster for relief pitchers for in most cases for the All-Star.
Yeah, I don't see any significant snubs.
Snubs, yeah. Anybody who deserves to be there over people who are. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, I guess you could make an argument that Romano with 28 saves, but I don't know. I don't think I would make that argument.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not worth fighting over at this point. No. I mean, I'm sure Jordan is fine with getting some rest time as well. Him and Eric Swanson have both been heavily utilized this first half of the season. So for a lot of these guys who aren't going to the All-Star game, they're going to be enjoying a few days off and well-deserved break. So it's a grind this MLB season, and luckily enough for the Jays too, like when they come out of the All-Star break, they play three games at home against Arizona and then have an off day right away. So it's a nice little break there, and then kind of another day off after that. So it'll be nice to see the team hopefully come back refreshed, and any ailments that they're nursing, they'll have a few days off to heal them. So that's good.
Yep, they're going to need it because the schedule is not easy the rest of July and then August and September.
Yeah,
if you're not playing your best baseball, you're not in the playoffs. So
yep, that's right. And we're only about like 3 weeks away from the trade deadline now too. So we'll discuss that a little bit today. But recently the Jays have been playing some good and some bad baseball, Patrick. I mean, got swept at home by Boston since the last time we chatted. Then swept the White Sox on the road, including a doubleheader sweep. Won the first game against Detroit. Alek Manoah came back through six solid innings. Anything we could take away from that Manoah start going forward? What did you happen to watch much of it?
No, I don't really have much to say about it, except I really want to see Manoah face an MLB team before we give him credit.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was pitiful against Houston back in June. It's only been, 32 calendar days, and then he started against Detroit. He looked good, no walks, eight strikeouts.
That was important, I think.
That's a big thing. I really, he's going to have to put together like five or six of these in a row before I would even to think about anything other than how much of a miserable season this has been.
Yeah, and so 91 pitches, 27 balls, 64 strikes. So he was in the zone. The slider was better. He locked some guys up and froze him on the slider, so that's a good sign.
It's a long road, though. Yeah, it's a long really road long road.
Command at times, location, he was still missing spots with pitches, which, I mean, every pitcher does, but when you're a guy who came into the game with your ERA at 6.36 for the season, you can tell that missing spots has not benefited him at all. So
it'd
be interesting to see what he'll obviously get some work in over the All-Star break, some side sessions, etc. And then interesting to see how they slot the rotation after the break. After that Manoah game, Patrick, Jays were riding high, and then they got no hit yesterday. Combined no-hitter Matt Manning, Jason Foley, and Alex Lang for the Tigers. John Schneider gave them props after the game and said, you know what? They're major league pitchers, and, I mean, some days you just don't have it. The Jays had a few hard-hit balls. I was looking back at the game logs on Savant, and as a team, their expected batting average was still well below 200, so like there wasn't a ton of positive contact yesterday. And some of the hard-hit balls, even though they were hard-hit, were projected to be outs anyway, so it's not like the Jays got robbed too many times. There's only a few contact points that probably result in hits more often than not. But again, there was nothing kind of unlucky about it. They just got beat. And I mean, that happens. It's happened before. It'll happen again in baseball. So good pitching always beats good hitting. That's just the way she goes.
It's true. I think what I would argue is that the starter, he did throw a lot of balls. The Jays did see a lot of pitches. I do think that there has been a fundamental issue with patience at the plate, especially with some of the power hitters. I mean, I thought last year was Vladdy's floor, and it seems more and more like the patience that he initially had, especially in his season where he was second in MVP voting, his patience is evaporating more and more. And I don't know if it's the instruction he gets or if it's just he is frustrated and that's just making him swing at stuff out of the zone more and more. But you see it a lot with like the Biggios. We see it with Chapman. I'm not trying to blast these guys for getting no hit just because they got no hit. In general, I would say that the hitting patience of this team is not where it needs to be.
For what it's worth, Matt Chapman, the last 3 days, does have the most walks on the team. Also has the most strikeouts, but you kind of expect that from him.
Yeah, it's all or nothing.
Guy. But I mean,
yeah,
over that time, Vladdy, if you look at him specifically, 5 walks to 17 strikeouts, does have 20 RBIs on the team, which is the most kind of by far the last 30 days. So has been hitting only .265, but a lot of his hits have been productive. And of course, gets every day at bats. So a lot of time out there to do stuff like this. And Bo Bichette, 2 walks to 22 strikeouts the last 30 days, which again is expected for Bo Bichette. He's still hitting 311 over that time. So
I just feel like the patience that we saw back in 2021 that this team had, it's not there. And maybe it's because it's there's no Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and no Teoscar, and they are pretty good at it. But I just feel like the approach, there are times where the approach of this team gets just abandoned because everybody wants to hit the big hit, right? Everyone wants to be the one that drives the action, and everybody has to understand their role. I think some do very well. Whit Merrifield does. I think Kevin Kiermaier does, although we've seen him cool off quite a bit. But you know, all the big guys, for them to get blanked out like that, I don't know. I just, this isn't the first game. This isn't like the starting point of when I've had these thoughts and feelings. This goes back to a miserable May, where it did feel like there was a lack of patience. But
so, did you mean that like you think Gurriel and Teoscar have like good patience at the plate? Is that what you meant?
It felt like I'm only going off of like feeling. Well, yeah, that the team's approach in 2021 appeared to be one of more patience as opposed to this team.
Yeah, right. And just for reference, both Gurriel and Teoscar currently own 6.5% walk rates this year. Gurriel, of course, strikes out less than Teoscar Hernandez. Teoscar is actually striking out more this year than he did any year since 2019. So it's
what were their walk rates in 2021?
2021, 6.1 for Teoscar. So his career rate is 7.3. And yeah. Gurriel's was 5.9. His career rate is 5.8. So they both do not take walks. They in fact
they both hit close to 300 though in those seasons. So they're
Gurriel was 276 and Teoscar was 296. So,
yeah.
I mean, yes and no, but I mean, power numbers that, I mean, Gurriel's hit 15 home runs again this year. He kind of recovered his power stroke, but
that's great for him.
It's good for him, but I mean, it's, they're still, both of them are, I mean, 1.5 WAR for Gurriel and 1.2 for Teoscar so far this year. So even though that their offense is kind of recovered from the point that it was last year, I mean, Teoscar's only hitting 249. He's actually having a worse offensive year. But Gurriel's WRC plus, even with the more home runs this year, is still only three higher, 117 versus 114 than it was last year. So he's only hitting 267. He's kind of sacrificed average for power. So that's kind of the way it goes. But, yeah, I mean, neither guy is super patient. Just wanted to make sure that was what you said. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm okay with being wrong about that. Yesterday is a perfect example of where I think their approach at the plate doesn't quite work. I don't know whether or not it's the coaching or if it's the individual players.
Sure.
But this team is definitely underperforming at the plate. I don't think anybody could argue against that. I like, other than Bo Bichette, most guys are below their career average.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe I'm giving guys like Kevin Biggio too much credit. He's hitting 200 this year, which is actually good for him, but it's below his career average.
And like, everyone's kind of shitting on Dalton Varsho. I mean, his career average is only 229 and he's hitting 215 right now, so not that far below. Just the power numbers have fallen off just a touch over last year. He's still on pace for over 20 home runs, but
yeah, Kirk is what, 20 points below career average?
Kirky, I mean, 25. he's way down there at this point. I mean, the guy, we'll talk about them in a second, but yeah, Kirk's hitting 239 and his career average is 269, and last year he hit 285. So
the other thing is this team, I haven't gone deep diving into the runners and scoring position stat and where they land.
It's still not good.
And MLB, it's definitely bottom 10.
Yeah.
But again, it's another thing where this team, their offense should be better than it is, and it's just not. And I think yesterday is a good example of this team, they either blow out a team or they get, you know, they get slaughtered. And yeah, it's just bizarre to watch this team struggle so much at the plate after years of being known for their power. It's just, I find it very disappointing, and we'll talk about those other two players specifically, but again, like, I know you have it in the notes here, flush it and move on. I think that's probably a better approach than me kind of sitting here wondering.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you look back
since
July 19th, that first game against Miami when the Jays were shut out 11-0. They've been shut out now four times in the last kind of 3 weeks now.
That's concerning.
And
that's
before that, it had been like concerning. 90 games since they had been shut out, getting back to last year. They've also won 12-1 against Oakland, which is Oakland, and of course that 12-2 win against Detroit. So there have been, as you mentioned, some blowouts, but I mean, the majority of their games have been relatively close. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 one-run wins in that time, or one-run games, excuse me. Some of them were losses, but I mean, lots of the games have been close, but then there have been those laughers either way. So it is what it is at this point. You just hope that now that we're into the final 3 months of the season, the team starts playing their best baseball, because now they need to. Whit Merrifield Patrick's going to lead off today. Of course, with Springer on the paternity list, you had to shuffle the lineup around. They just bumped everybody up yesterday and had Bo Bichette leading off. Not the best place for Bo, in my opinion. Again, I'm not the manager. I don't have all the data that the Blue Jays have, but it just feels that with Bo's aggressive approach, even though he's elite at like fouling balls off and extending at bats when he does get to two strikes, that isn't always the best guy to have in that first spot to start off a game. You want to kind of work that opposing pitcher a little bit, and Bo doesn't see a ton of pitches for plate appearance because he often puts balls in play early, which isn't always a bad thing, of course. Elite hitter, but I think that that two hole is where you need to have Bo Bichette, because I think he's just so much better with runners on base. His opposite field approach is really conducive to that. I mean, you get Merrifield on first base, the first baseman's got to hold him on. That just opens up that right side for Bo to shoot a ball through, and that's what he likes to do. So I just think putting somebody ahead of Bo so that he can hit in that second spot is just that much better. Is how do you feel about it?
I've been wanting this for months.
Yeah.
No, there's no offense to George Springer, who has definitely dramatically improved since the start of the year.
Sure.
In fact, he has 13 home runs, which is tied with Vladdy.
Yeah.
But Witt is just... I just see him as being a guy that we need to push runs across the plate right now. George mm-hmm. doesn't have the same speed that Witt has. And Witt's hitting for better average. I think you just, it's a situation where you have to put the hotter hitter at the top of the lineup. And that's not to say George isn't hot. It's just a very handsome man. But I'm saying Witt right now is hitting the way that a leadoff hitter, you would want a leadoff hitter to hit.
Yeah.
I'm fine with George batting second or third. Obviously, he's not in the lineup today.
Yeah.
But
I don't think George will ever hit not in the leadoff spot unless he's really struggling, and he hasn't. He's been super hot the last month. So.
Yeah. No, I'm giving him credit.
Yeah,
saying
for sure. No, I get you.
Witt is a leadoff hitter, so.
He has been in his career, yeah.
Having him in that spot today, I think, is shuffling the lineup around, gives them an opportunity to maybe start off a little bit better. They have to face Tarek Skubal, who I believe has only started one game.
Yeah, he just came back on July the 4th for his first start. He kind of got hurt right before the trade deadline last year after being included in a bunch of trade rumors.
Yes, including ones for the Jays. I was definitely really hoping that they would pursue Tarek Skubal.
Could be available again this year with the Tigers kind of being the Tigers, you know. And he started off against Oakland, so Skubal was able to face kind of a weaker opponent. Then he went four innings, didn't give up any hits, and struck out six. So seemed to bounce right back. Lefty starter. Still has three more years of control arbitration after this. Isn't a free agent until 2027. So a guy who, if he is performing well as these next kind of few starts for him this month go along, could be a big name at the trade deadline again if the Tigers decide to kind of sell their valuable assets that they have, and he would probably be maybe their most valuable at this point. So
if it happens, I think the Jays will be a team that definitely aggressively pursues him. I know that we already have a logjam at starting, but you can never have too many starters.
That's very true. Especially a guy with control. I mean, you know that. I mean, it really depends on what Ryu does the rest of the year, but he's a free agent after this season. And everybody else in your rotation is under control for one more year. You still have Kikuchi for one more year, and then everybody else is longer term than that. Bassett's got a couple more after this. So, I mean, starting pitching isn't the biggest need. Of course, that's probably offense and maybe another reliever for the Blue Jays. But, I mean, it's... if you can get them for a good price, which you won't be able to, but if the price is right, you may see the Jays kind of make a move for him. So, yeah. It's worth looking into, of course. So he's going to start today against Chris Bassett. Finish off the first half unofficially. I mean, it's already been over half the games, but Bassett kind of bounced back as his last two starts out. San Fran, he was six shutout innings. Then he was three runs on six innings over against the White Sox. Still a quality start. So we'll see what happens today. He's going to have Denny Jansen in there catching him. Denny Jansen's DHing today, excuse me. Kirk is going to be in there catching today. Biggio, Espinal, Kiermaier, all in there at the bottom half of the order.
Yeah.
No Brandon Belt today because of the lefty on the mound. So Kiermaier and Biggio are the two lefties in the lineup today. They're starting off with seven straight righties for the Blue Jays. But, I mean, at the later on in the game, you could see guys like Varsho and Belt get pinch hit appearances depending on what happens for relievers. You got to think Skubal is still going to be under some sort of constraint today and only his second start back.
Yeah, I'd say there's a 100% chance that Danny Jansen doesn't finish the game as DH. I just don't, like, I just think they're just so fortunate, right, to have two two catchers that can hit, and not to say that they have been hitting very well this year, but they can. Danny has the power. Kirk has something.
Something.
Not yes. power or average this year. Yeah.
I mentioned Scooble too. He went 57 pitches last time out, so he's probably going to be closer to 70 or 80 today, I'd imagine. So.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, if he runs into trouble early, I don't see him going past five for sure. It's just tough. That's tough. I think there's a lot of opportunity, especially in the middle of the order, to mix and match, especially with Witt being in left field today. You could mess things around. Witt could end up the game finishing the game at second. You could pinch hit for Espinal. You can. Danny flip out to catcher. Kirk get
lose your DH if you put Danny to catcher though. So
well, no, because then you
pinch hit for that pitcher spot. But
yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
You can do it later in a game as long as you have enough bench bats that you can fill in for the pitcher spot when it comes up. Because if you put your DH into your game, then your pitcher is technically in the lineup as a hitter at that point.
Yeah,
but you just pinch hit for it.
So. Yeah, if that's happening in the sixth or seventh inning, that means that Bassett is done. So you could, yeah, I guess you could, but I'm just trying to overthink this one. I do think Belt will get an opportunity today, especially if Scooble is knocked out early. So
yeah, I see it.
We'll see. I mean, if he is knocked out early, why bother? Because if we're already up 6-0. You don't really need to hammer their face in any harder than that.
let's talk about a couple guys here, Patrick, who are and have been struggling at the plate this season compared to kind of what we're used to seeing, or at least one of them what we're used to seeing. That's Alejandro Kirk and Dalton Varsho. Looking at their numbers over the past 30 and 15 days, over the past month, Patrick, Kirk's OPS is at 398. That's not his on base, that's his OPS, on base plus slugging, while Varsho's is at 556. Past 15 days, it's worse. 295 for Kirk, 541 for Varsho. Alejandro Kirk is still not striking out. He's only struck out twice over the past 30 days, but he has not drawn a single walk over that time, while Varsho has 5 walks and 27 strikeouts, which is career numbers for him. He strikes out quite a bit. Looking at deeper savant numbers here, we like to pull these up to kind of get an idea of where guys are at, and it's not pretty for Alejandro Kirkpatrick. If you look at his stats from last year, 78th percentile average exit velo, 78th hard hit percentage, 92nd percentile expected batting average, those numbers are at 18th percentile for this year in average exit velo, 27th for hard hit percentage, and 34th for expected batting average. Still not striking out at all, like 98th percentile for K rate, which is elite, but the walk numbers have fallen off from 88th last year to only 54th this year. No whiffs, chasing just a little bit more this year, but still making quite a bit of contact, and I think that chase rate is kind of part of the reason he's been struggling a little bit more, is because even though he is making contact with a lot of these zones, and we talked about this a few episodes ago when we kind of did a bit of a deep dive into Kirky, but he's just not really hitting fastballs well this year compared to in the past. Last year he had an 11 run value on four seam fastballs. This year it's only one, so he's just really weak against the heat this year, which is kind of surprising when you think about it. His whiff percentage is up on these. His expecting batting average against fastballs is only 254 versus the 298 it was last year. And the hard hit rate is down from 60% to below 49%. So he's not making good contact on fastballs. And major league players who struggle against fastballs are going to struggle against everything. And that's just been the case all season for him. For me lately, it's just, I look at him and I see just these at bats that are kind of, they're odd, whereas he's making lots of contact, the balls are in play, but he's not hitting the pitches that I believe he should be swinging at. You know, like we talked about it before, he's getting a lot of first pitch strikes, and it seems that he's not swinging at a lot of first pitches. And I mean, if I'm a guy who's struggling and I'm getting first pitch strikes just about two-thirds of the time, I'm probably going to be looking for something to ambush on that first pitch, whether it's a get me over breaker or a fastball. I mean, you got to pick that pitch and you got to go for it. But guys are pitching him down and away as they've done to Vladdy this year. And both the guys are not making super good contact out there. So that's what I've seen from Kirk. Defense is still elite, but offensively the Jays definitely need more from him. And they're lucky that Denny Jansen has been hot lately, because they kind of would have went from position of strength offensively at catcher to one of current weakness.
Yeah, and kind of, I mean, hindsight being what it is, it's certainly the trade to acquire Varsho feels a lot worse today than what it probably will end up being. I mean, Moreno is having an okay season in Arizona, and so is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. But that's, I mean, at it's the tough. Time...
You yeah. knew you were going to lose some offense in favor of defense for this trade. You knew it was going to be the case.
And that was the thing, was the main weakness of the 2021 and 2022 Blue Jays was defense was not good. So Kirk was, at the time... I mean, Kirk is still only, what, 24?
He's still younger 25. Than both Vladdy and Bo, yeah.
Yeah, like, he's younger, so, like, the fact that he's having a down year is not, like, it doesn't make you... Yeah,
he's going to turn 25 in November.
Yeah, like, it doesn't really make me want to blow chunks. Yeah. Like, it's going to be fine. Even great catchers in the past have had up and down years. Russell Martin comes to mind. He's had ups and downs. I mean, Kirk is still very young, so having a bad year, it sucks, but... We knew he was going to regress. He had an all-star year last year. I don't.
Yeah, and he regressed in the second half last year even. He was hitting over 300 in the first half of the season.
Yeah, so I don't know. When I look at his percentile rankings, the thing that really sticks out to me is it seems like the power is just way, way, way down.
Yeah, it's that barrel rate, you know, if you look at it.
That could be a number of different things, though, contributed to that. Maybe he came into the season unprepared.
He was hurt during spring training, remember? He showed up late.
That is true.
Because he had some... I mean, I can't remember if it was hurt, if it was...
No, he was having... It was a baby.
Oh, yeah, baby, right. Baby took a while. So he missed the WBC, missed the first part of spring training. And that's tough for a catcher, right? Because, I mean, there's new pitching staff, some new relievers. Bassett, he's been working with quite a bit, is a new starting pitcher. Swanson, I mean, you've got guys who are coming in, and your job as a catcher is to learn the pitching staff, and offense kind of takes a back seat in spring training, and you're probably right, that may have got him off on the back foot.
Yep. I mean, with Varsho, it's almost not fair to...
You can't compare him to the guys he replaced in Teoscar and Lourdes. They're completely different players than what they do.
They're completely different players. What impresses me about Varsho is that he is outstanding defensively. He's done everything that we've asked him to do defensively. The difference between Varsho, like my expectation for Varsho is like maybe 20, 25 points in batting average. Same with OBP, same with slug. It's like, it's minor. It's not enough.
Yeah.
It's not enough for me to really cry. The power is there. It's just, there's no opposite field power, really.
Yeah. He's the opposite Denny Jansen. They're both just pull happy hitters. One's a righty, one's a lefty, and their strength is pulling the ball. Biggest issue for Varsho offensively has been just getting kind of blown away on the inside part of the plate. He's got a really hard time turning inside pitches around. He, in fact, according to Savant, has not barreled a single pitch on the inner third of the plate this year.
Yeah.
Not a single one. And if you look at where he's getting pitched, the majority of it, if it's not up and away, which has been a spot he likes to swing at, when it's in the zone, I mean, he's getting worked quite a bit on that inner third, and more so lately. And I mean, you look at his K percentages, Patrick, and 38% K percentage on that middle in quadrant of the plate. That's where he's just getting victimized on all of his strikeouts, is that inner third of the plate. And until he can make adjustments to change that, he's going to continue to see it. I mean, he's gotten only 4 or 9 hits on pitches on the inner third of the strike zone, 10 hits. Ouch. He's got one down and in. Most of his damage is done kind of middle in, middle up, or middle up, and middle away. So he definitely is a guy who likes to extend the bat through the zone. But until you can get that bat head through, and you see Bo Bichette do it all the time, where he just shoots those pitches in the inner third the other way, until you can start doing that, or at least getting around on it and pulling those too, you're going to continue to get victimized there. And it's just the way it's going to be.
He just can't hit the slider this year too.
That has been an issue. Yeah, you're completely right.
It's not good. But the other problem I'm seeing is that he is just not catching up with fastballs and sinkers either. Yep. Savant makes it easy to say these things, but
and I mean it's true, and the data doesn't lie in these situations, right? There's a pretty big negative run value on fastballs right now at -9, and even sinkers at -7. So he's just really struggling with any sort of velo. Whereas if you look at a guy like Kevin Biggio, who it's long been said, oh, he can't hit the fastball, this year Kevin actually has a positive run value against four-seam fastballs.
Yeah. Well, how is Kevin doing against everything else, though?
Not so great against sinkers and changeups, but, I mean, he's hitting sliders, he's hitting fastballs. Obviously, the numbers aren't that great overall for Kevin, but I'm just trying to make a comparison between
a
guy who's been historically said, oh, he can't hit the fastball, versus a guy like Varsho, who in the past, I mean, has had better success against fastballs, not so much like positive success, but not as bad as he has been this year.
The barrels are
they're way down.
They're so far down. He went from 51st in MLB last year to he's 187th.
Yeah, and that's
74th.
70th percentile last year to 40th percentile this year.
It's bad.
So just big time down. The average exit velo is about the same, but the expected batting average has fallen quite a bit too. The strikeouts are, like, the strikeout rate is up. Walks are about the same. Chase rate and whiff percentage, not super different. A little bit actually better than last year. So he is making that contact a bit more, but it's not meaningful contact. Sprint speed is about the same. So most of his numbers are the same except for the contact, the velocity metrics is really what's hurting him, is he's just getting jammed quite a bit. Of course, he's able to get on base in other ways. A lot of incredible bunt singles. He's so good at that, bringing that ball with him towards the second baseman.
They need to do that
way.
They need to do it more.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense that they don't.
Yeah, he really does pick his spots well when it's other teams aren't expecting it. But hasn't hit a home run recently, I don't believe. I'm just trying to look through the game logs. His last home run was against Texas on June the 17th.
Ooh.
So it has been 3-ish weeks. Hit 4 home runs in June, 6 in May, only 2 in April and March. But it's been a bit of a power drought for him, and hasn't had a double since the 28th of June. So it's been another like almost 10 games since his last extra base hit. So just really struggling to generate any sort of kind of meaningful contact. And I mean, he kind of peaked, and I say peaked, his average was at 231, which is right around his career number, kind of in the mid-June, the day he last hit his home run. And since then, it's fallen all the way down to 215 over the past, so a 16-point drop over the past few weeks. And the OPS itself has even gone in the bad direction too, from 713 down to 649, just due to that lack of power. So I think he's a guy who's going to benefit from a couple days off. He has been playing mostly every day. He's not starting today because of the lefty on the mound. But I think a lot of these guys who are struggling offensively are going to actually benefit from the days off. It's the guys who aren't struggling, like the Springers, the I guess the Bows of the world, who actually would like to just keep going because you once you get in that groove, you just want to keep playing. But I think for guys like Varsho and Kirk, and I mean for catchers too, it's and outfielders. I mean their legs get an incredible amount of strain and workout because they're moving on every play and crouching in terms of catching. So it's just getting off their feet for a few days will probably help benefit and get their legs back under them for the offensive approach too. So we'll see what happens.
I would say the thing is, I don't want to beat up on both these guys too much because I feel like this is a problem the entire team has. Mm-hmm. Like they're all underperforming at the plate except for Bo. The rest of them, I feel like, they have not yet had their hottest month.
Sure.
And even then, Bo in September is terrifying. So I do think, like, I think this team is playing its worst baseball. And I'm not saying that to criticize, like to be negative, because this, I think being 8 games above 500 at this point in the season is still good.
Still fine, yeah.
It's definitely about 5 or 6 games below what we had hoped for.
Yeah.
For sure. But.
But you look, Tampa Bay's lost 7 games in a row, Patrick. The Orioles are actually like 2.5 games back, 2 games back of Tampa Bay now. The Jays and the Yankees are both at 7 games back. I mean, the Red Sox are 9 games back. Every team in this division is within 10 games of the Rays again, when for a while, I mean, they were 20 games up on Boston. We're starting to see, I mean, we always say they play 162 games for a reason, right? Remember when the Washington Nationals won the World Series, they were last place in their division at the All-Star break and ended up getting into the playoffs and winning it all. So it's like you play 162 because the numbers will, everything regresses to where it should be, whether it's positive or negative over that time. Tampa Bay is pretty beat up right now. Their pitching staff is kind of getting ravaged by injuries. They're tired, and that's because they had heavy usage start the season, and their offense has slowed down quite a bit too. And they're playing tough teams right now, which like the Braves, who are playing their best baseball right now, they're now have the best record in baseball at 60 wins and 28 losses. So they're playing incredibly well. They have a 9.5 game lead in their division over the Marlins.
Two months ago, the Mets were in the lead in that division, or they were fighting for the lead, and now they're in fourth, and they're
5 games below 500.
They're practically out of it because Philadelphia and Miami are already 6.5
games back of the third wild card spot, which is
2 months ago. While the Jays were heavy on the struggle bus, Pittsburgh was first in their division. They are now fourth, and they are pretty much
they're cooked.
They're 8.5 back of a wild card spot.
Yeah.
Arizona was nowhere near division lead, and now here they are half a game up on the Dodgers. San Francisco were hot, and then they cooled off, and now they're starting to right the ship. San Diego is 5 games below 500. No one could have predicted that.
Yeah,
there's so much baseball left. There's like 100. Even after today's game, let's say we lose it, 49-42.
The Jays have played, they'll have played 91 games going after today, so there will still be 61 games left.
Yep.
Or 71 games.
No, 71 games left. That's a lot of baseball, man. Yeah. You rip a 10-game winning streak, you could find yourself in the division lead.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
So the swings with this team have been wild because of how bad they were in May and then how good they were in June. And now in July, they're 4-3. They have a chance to go into the All-Star break. 50-40 run. That would be a good record. If someone had told me at the beginning of the year that was the case, I would be comfortable with that. The real concerning numbers for the Toronto Blue Jays are their record against divisional opponents. It's bad, and that will be a problem in the last 2 weeks of the season. It will come back to haunt them. And their record against teams above 500 is very bad. It's as bad as the AL Central's record against teams above 500. It's bad. So yeah. I could see how somebody could make the argument that the Jays are pretender because they've performed so poorly against their divisional opponents and so poorly against teams that are above 500. At the same time, there's less weight on divisional games with this new the new schedule.
Yeah.
So you could be bad against your division and still make the playoffs. It's harder, and it will be with a division like the AL East. I don't think there's another division that's even close to being that competitive. But there's lots of time left. Sure. And, you know, getting some reinforcements at the deadline will go a long way. And restructuring or reconsidering how the rotation looks might also be something that the Jays have to do after the All-Star break.
Great segue. Yeah, leading into that, Patrick, like, obviously, Hyunjin Ryu is a few weeks away still, probably end of the month. Basically, you look at him as a trade deadline acquisition at this point. And same with Chad Green. But now that Manoah has been recalled, which is probably earlier than most people expected, and I mean, we've kind of beat that horse to death over the past 2 months talking about whether to send him down or not and how long he should be down there. But you've got five starters in the big leagues now. They're all healthy for the moment. Coming out of the All-Star break, we know Bassett's starting today. Then there's 4 days off with no baseball until the Jays come back again on Friday. I mean, how do you... If you're the manager of the team, how do you structure the rotation for that Arizona series, knowing that you have an off day on the following Monday as well?
I think you got to put your best forward. I think it's just a fact.
So what are you doing then? You're going Gausman, Bassett, Berríos for that series?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to.
Where do you put Manoah before or after Kikuchi?
After.
You think Manoah's at the bottom, hey? Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
And I mean, they're gonna see the Padres coming to town after the D-backs, so you've got 6 games of interleague play at home, including an off day. So I mean, Manoah pitched on Friday the 7th. If he doesn't pitch again until the San Diego series, that would mean he would have like 10 or 11 days off between starts. So you know he's gonna get some side sessions in there. I'd almost be tempted to even just like send Manoah down to AAA during the All-Star break to like get him an extra start, keep him on schedule, you know? I know it's weird, be weird to do, but...
No, I would do it. I wouldn't even have called him up
the reason I'm thinking of doing it this too is because then you can build off of what he just did against Detroit and hopefully keep it going, because even though the Padres are under 500, they're also playing in a really good division. And they have really good hitters. Like you think of Tatis, Machado, Soto. Like these guys have sluggers on their team. And like Soto's maybe one of the best, like most patient hitters in MLB history. And just really good at working the zone. And he's a lefty, which Manoah has struggled against this year. And I think by starting Berríos and Bassett against the D-backs, you avoid putting them against tough lefties in San Diego, because both those guys have been kind of victimized by lefties. And I think you'll be able to use Kikuchi, Manoah, and then Gausman again, who just owns whoever he pitches against. He doesn't really care because the splitter claims victims regardless. Then you can avoid having Berríos and Bassett going against good lefties that San Diego have. Not that Arizona's a bad team either, but you're gonna see
division leader,
and they've got Rookie of the Year candidate, MVP candidate Corbin Carroll there. Gurriel's gonna come back. Moreno's gonna come back. We know what those guys can do. They've good righty hitters, but I mean it's not going to be easy. And then after that, it's Seattle and the Dodgers on the road, a little West Coast swing. So I mean it's a tough 4-series stretch right out of the All-Star break. And I think that you're 100% right in the way you structure the rotation, that you have to put your best three guys in a row to start it off. And I mean you've got two more off days in July still coming. So you can always reshuffle if you feel the need to get ready for August, when you have Baltimore, Boston, and Cleveland coming, followed by the Cubs. So I mean there's a long stretch from July 28th until August the 13th where they play games in a row without off days. So kind of how you set your series up after the first four after the All-Star break is going to be crucial for the next 3 weeks.
That's why I don't think you can factor in Manoah at all. I think he has to be a guy that, I hate to say it, there's just not enough trust there. I just
what
think
happens
he has to spot start.
What happens when Ryu comes back? Do you go full six man rotation or?
Yes.
You do, hey.
Well, you gotta try. You gotta give Ryo the opportunity because if he comes back and he's you know,
yeah,
pitching outstanding, then you gotta ride that.
And we'll see more today, depending on how it goes with his start for Dunedin. But I mean, it's gonna be interesting to see kind of how that goes. But I mean, it's gonna be really interesting to see like how Manoah is pitching, because that's going to determine if he stays in the big league rotation when Ryu is ready to come back, because right now he's got the most vulnerable spot because of how he performed the first 3 months of the year. And go ahead.
I think what they're going to run into is trying to make a decision as far as whether or not they go full six man rotation, which has its drawbacks, but also big time benefits.
Yeah, if all the guys are clipping along, you can give everybody an extra day of rest every time through, which is never a bad thing.
I honestly think what'll end up happening is it'll be a six man or well, five man rotation, but that fifth spot is going to be passed around a lot.
Sure.
Between Ryu and Manoah. But it could be maybe Ryu comes back and all he can give us is 30 pitches. Then, okay,
I mean,
there's our bullpen acquisition. There's our swing man.
I don't see that being the case, but yeah.
I don't, but
the hypothetical is worth thinking. I mean, you've got Chad Green coming back too, so your bullpen is going to get reinforcements. So you've got Ryu and Chad Green coming back towards the end of the month, which is the trade deadline, of course.
They're kind of the deadline acquisition.
They
that's
kind
why
of are on the pitching side of things. But, I mean, offensively, you've got to look at making the bench better because, I mean, you've had Nathan Lucas, Ernie Clement kind of rotating through that last bench spot this whole entire season. But neither of them have made any meaningful contribution to this team in terms of, like, starting games on occasion. You've really only seen, I mean, Biggio, Espinal and Belt as like your main bench guys that are just kind of starting. One or two of them is in every starting lineup basically as they rotate guys through and give guys days off. But you need to have good playoff teams, and teams who win in the playoffs have a bench that is full of guys that they can plug in whenever, right? And I think that needs to be a focus, is either getting somebody who's young and has control, or getting a veteran who's maybe on like some sort of expiring contract to come in. And I think you almost need to look at getting another right-handed bat, which is crazy because I just feel like the lefties that you have in Kiermaier, Belt, Biggio, and Varsha, I mean, three of those four guys other than Varsha are guys who are really capable of working a competitive at bat and like drawing a walk or seeing a lot of pitches.
Yeah.
And three of the four, I mean, two of the four, I guess you could say, Belt and Varsho have home run power. Biggio has hit home runs and Kiermaier can, but neither of them are known for that. But I think you need to look at getting just like a right-handed bat to come in who is just that kind of lefty destroyer. And can maybe play, I mean, a utility man, an outfielder. I don't know what it is, but you need somebody to come in who can actually start games and or just be that reliable bench bat. I don't want to really get into too many names or whatever else, because we can do that as the month goes along here. But I mean, offense is the priority right now, right? You got to score runs. You got no hit and lost 2-0 on a wasted Gausman start again yesterday. And
yeah, I agree.
You
got to
score runs.
The way I look at it is that we have three priorities. The top priority is improving the quality of the bench bats. I'm sorry to say, but Biggio, Espinal, Lucas, and Clement are not passing muster at this point. I think at least three of those guys have to be replaced. I honestly think we're at a point where even though Espinal has improved and his defense is still great, I see him as being the odd man out on this team in the long term. I think his days as a J are very numbered. It's sad because I was big Espinal fan, but he's fallen off a cliff over the last 12 months.
Yeah, and if you were to move Espinal, then you've either got to have like Otto Lopez come up because he can play shortstop, because nobody else on this team currently plays shortstop. So either you have to trade Espinal for another guy who can play shortstop, or there'd be a subsequent move coming where you'd have to make two trades essentially to get a backup shortstop. Because I mean, as much as Bo Bichette loves to play every day, if something were to happen to him, or you want to just give him a DH stay, right, which they do on occasion, you need somebody who can play shortstop. So
what you need is you need a fourth outfielder. Because if you're trading Espinal, that means Merrifield is going to start second.
Yeah, Merrifield and Biggio are your second baseman, and
which means you need a backup. You need a backup outfielder, and you need a backup shortstop.
So, and that's usually guys that don't do those two positions. You don't find too many utility men who play shortstop and outfield well enough to say that they can do that on a regular basis. So.
Yeah, so it's going to be two separate players, which means Espinal has to be dealt if you're
going
to do that.
Yeah, I think Espinal and Biggio are going to be shopped. And I mean, both of those guys still have some runway in terms of like roster control. Espinal is not a free agent until the 2027 season, so he still has 24, 25, and 26 of team control.
The control on Espinal is the upside. That in his defense, if you can improve his hitting, then he's
Biggio is two more years of control after this, so 24 and 25.
I think that the more that I look around, I feel like the team we would match up with quite well with trading with, it might be the New York Mets, but the Mets are also...
Yeah, they should give us Francisco Lindor and keep paying all of his salary.
No.
I know. I'm just...
They had a bad May, and they had a really bad June, but they're 6-1 in July, so I don't know if they're ready to pull the plug on their season, but
no,
if you look at their...
they're going to fight back, I think.
Yeah, if you look at their bullpen, Autumn Adovino would be a decent option for the Jays.
He was actually brought up on the broadcast a few weeks ago, even as a potential
target. I also think Brooks Raley at 35 is also another expiring contract.
Yeah, he's been a good holds guy for them too.
You don't want Tommy Pham. You don't want Brandon Nimmo. You don't want Starling Marte. And you're not going to get Mark Canna.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you want him either.
I think you go after their bullpen guys if you can get
Brooks Raley, Adovino makes sense. Yeah. But that's only if the Mets throw in the towel. They've got the Padres, and then they've got Dodgers, White Sox, Red Sox, Yankees, Nationals. So by the end of July, they're either going to be back in the wild card fight or they'll be super dead, 100 feet underground. I think they'll be 100 feet underground before they get to the Nationals. But they've also been hot lately. But they're the team that I would consider trading with just because they have a good bullpen. And there are a lot of old hands, and I think you'd roll the dice. Sure. And I think you could get those guys for cheap. I think Santiago Espinal could net you one of those guys. But then you have to do something about a backup shortstop. I don't know if Otto Lopez is the answer.
Right.
He could be.
Yeah.
Do I think he could hit better than 222 with no power that Espinal has? Yeah, probably. So maybe he's the answer.
It's possible.
But then if you are picking up an extra pen arm, who is the odd one out? Is it Mitch White? Is it Adam Simber? Do you just shut down Adam Simber?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what his injury is doing. He hasn't resumed throwing yet, so I mean,
that's not a good sign.
Be a guy you put on the 60-day IL to clear a 40-man spot for a move. So, you would have hoped that Lopez and like Addison Barger would be knocking the door, but I mean, Barger has had a couple injuries this season. He's just kind of coming back now from another one, and wasn't hitting well before. And I mean, Lopez hasn't done as much this year as he had in the past either. So it's it's tough. I mean, you look at Lopez this year, and with Buffalo, he's hitting, he's hitting 297, so he has turned it around. Last time I looked, it wasn't like that. So, I mean, Lopez is a guy who could be a potential replacement, a guy who is taking a lot of walks this year. Oh, sorry, I'm looking at his stats from last year. He's only hitting 244 this year. I was wrong.
Yeah.
I was right. So he's not doing enough either with a 613 OPS in AAA. So he's not pushing any doors down right now either.
Oakland might be another team we might want to consider picking clean as far as their relievers go.
Some talk that Ramon Laureano might be available in the outfield too, and he's always been a good defender. So.
Yeah, I think the Jays are the type of team you can easily trade with. Because they're in win now mode, their farm system or their minor league prospect depth is almost non-existent. There's a very few players I think that warrant any value, and the only ones that do, like Ricky Tiedemann, is injured.
Yeah,
you're not trading him anyway. Brandon Beria, who you just got from the draft last year, you're not trading him. And you're probably not going to trade Orelvis Martinez, even though he's having a significant improvement.
The draft is coming up, too. It's tonight. So it's like you'll have some fresh prospect capital there. And depending on who you get in the MLB draft, that may open up your willingness to trade other prospects that you currently have. You know, it might, especially if you get a guy who you thought team ahead of you was going to take, and that kind of bumps down your it changes who you're willing to move based on who you get in this draft, I think. So I think if this is today is going to be an interesting kind of precursor, I think, to the trade deadline, because you'll see who teams are adding in the draft. And let's say the Jays go out and add a bunch of shortstops again, or they add some more pitching, that may show their willingness to trade some of their guys they already have, right? So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I did read a little bit about the outfielders that are available in this draft, and I do think that the Jays will probably use their pick for an outfielder. I feel like this is the year where they probably try to restock their outfield supply, just because no offense to Nathan Lucas, but he's 28. And going on 29, and
yeah, he's not a prospect anymore.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying he is. He's our call up at this point for outfield depth. And
yeah, top outfield prospect is Gabriel Martinez at number 12 according to Pipeline, and then Desan Brown at 15.
But Lucas being the call up guy right now, and he can't. We need to I do think we need another outfielder on this roster.
Sure.
But like you said, we also, if we're going to trade Espinal to try to get a reliever to add depth to
the Blue Jays at 20th this year. So they're not going to get one of those, like, I mean, in other sports you call them a lottery pick. There's no lottery in baseball, of course. But I mean, they're not going to get one of those guys. And I mean, there aren't a ton of outfielders in this draft. Like there's some of the top 10, like they're all pretty much locks for the top 10. Like the number one pick is going to be an outfielder. Wyatt Langford is likely who's going to go from Florida. But I mean, it's going to be a handful of outfielders probably in that top 10 range. And the Blue Jays don't pick until 20th. So unless one of these prospects doesn't get picked for some reason, and or has told teams that they won't sign with certain teams if they do pick them, then you might see a guy fall. But to 20th, it's pretty unlikely. It's looking like the Jays will probably, lots of drafts have them projected to pick a third baseman and or a shortstop again, just because of people who are available. There even are some pitchers around that kind of spot who could go. A couple college bats, a couple high school pitchers. So I'll be curious to see how the Jays go.
Could just be best player available year.
It will be at 20. The Jays always trying to draft that way by best player available, which is, in my opinion, the right way to draft anyway, unless there's like just a clear cut
Yes, it is. Need. Yeah, I agree with you. The clear-cut need on this team, I think, is outfield depth, but everything is shallow. So
yes,
I mean,
they've also shown the ability to sign free agents, right? Like Springer, obviously, was a free agent signing as an elite outfielder. Varsho, they traded for. So there are ways to use your strengths. I mean, they had a logjam at catcher, so they traded Moreno for Varsho. So there are ways to kind of, if you say you draft just a shit ton of catchers, for example, then other teams end up needing catchers, right? So, I mean, you draft the best player available so that they either end up helping you or they help you get somebody else. So,
yeah, I don't know. And the other thing, too, is come the deadline, do the Jays, maybe they do pursue a starting pitcher. Maybe not Tarek Skubal, but maybe they do. Maybe they have a plan, or maybe there's somebody who's on the outside looking in that it's really hard to tell, but I don't think their pitching can really get much younger or better. Like, I don't think Tarek Skubal
he'd be better than Kikuchi, but I mean, he's still probably your third or fourth best starter on your rotation currently. He's a very good pitcher, but I mean, he's pitching in the central.
Yeah. It's a different story than what it was. Last year, where Barrios was having a miserable
Kikuchi
season,
was miserable.
And Kikuchi
was
miserable.
Ryu was hurt. It was really only Gausman and Manoah who were good at this point last year.
No, Ross Stripling was definitely...
He was okay. He was doing enough.
Was definitely good. Overrated. We could have that debate another time. But yeah. Strips was like the anchor for rotation.
I mean, last year you had two elite starters at this point. And then Stripling was in there as like the serviceable, and then Barrios was two to three times was really good, and Kikuchi was kind of bouncing around between bullpen and starting at this point in the year.
And that's when we acquired Mitch White,
who struggled
bad.
Yeah, and at least this year, you know, you've got Gausman, Bassett, and Barrios, so you can pretty much count on to give you some mostly quality starts. Kikuchi's been able to give you 4 to 5 innings, which I mean is really what you want from him a couple times through the order, and then whatever you're getting from it was the bullpen day for a while. And if Manoah can come back and even just be a 5-inning guy with 2 runs or less every time out, you'll take that. So
yep, we'll have to wait and see though, because I think it's too early for any team to be making major trades or any major deals.
Yeah, it's
so
with the way the standings fluctuate. I mean, we talked about it, right? Tampa's falling back a little bit. Baltimore, Blue Jays, and the Yankees have all gained a little bit of ground on them. The wild card race is getting even more interesting. The Angels are still in it. Houston, Seattle, Angels, they're all going to be fighting over that AL West division. The Jays do have the tiebreaker over Houston, so the Jays would almost like to see them not win their division so that the Jays could beat them out in the wild card race. And I mean, they have... There's 3 games coming up against Seattle, and there's more games against the Angels at the end of the month here. So you want to get the tiebreaker over those 2 teams if possible as well, so that you can have the best possible. You can control your own destiny at that point if you do own those tiebreakers, because you don't have to worry about being tied with them and losing out on tiebreakers, right? So
it is a long
way to go.
Long road.
70 games left, as we said. And we're about 40 minutes away from first pitch, so let's wrap this up here. But we'll probably come back again to you next weekend, as obviously the All-Star break, there won't be too much to talk about. But after that Arizona Diamondbacks series, we'll see where the Jays stack up in a week's time. And it'll be curious to see what they end up doing with the rotation and what kind of injury news we get on Ryu and Chad Green as we progress through another week. So we'll keep you updated there. For Patrick out in Halifax, I am Justin here in Saskatoon. Thanks for listening as always. You can find our show anywhere you get your podcasts or on our website, bfmbpodcast.com. Until next time, we'll see you later.